Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.
All right, Jim and Jamal Potts back on the air. And as always, thank you so much for sharing your Sunday afternoon or your evening, depending on what coast you are on. We always do appreciate that. Jamal, how you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing all right. Hanging in there.
Good. I love that background, by the way. Isn't that, don't I recognize that picture?
Yeah, man, you should. Where you from? Hell, you bought it.
In New York City. Yeah, we're doing this a little bit different now, guys. We're moving forward now. We're going to be doing this by Zoom, so you would be able to actually see us. For those of you that are listening, the way that you can do that is to go to latalkradio.com and then click on Facebook. It's an icon down, I believe, in the lower right-hand part of the screen, and you'll be able to listen to us and also to be able to see us. We are expecting some callers today. So, again, this is going to be a new process. So bear with us if there's any technical glitches in this. But we're excited about how we're going to do this. We're also excited about our show today. When I say excited about it, I don't mean anything other than the seriousness of what we're going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about police brutality in America. And obviously this week has a lot of things have happened. And, you know, there's a lot to talk about. We're going to have an attorney from Minnesota that's going to be calling in shortly after I do the emails that will be talking to us more directly about some things that are going on out there. And his name is Zaylor Stout. And actually, that's my stepson. So we wanted to reach out to him and talk to him because he's right there in the middle of all of this. So that's what we're going to do. So, Jamal, you all set to get started for today?
Yes, sir.
Okay, let's start by reading these emails. The first one, Jim, I'm sure you have noticed an uptick in violence since the lockdowns have been lifted. 49 people shot in Chicago over the Memorial Day weekend, college student killing people, and another attack on a military base, which, by the way, for the listeners, was down in Corpus Christi, Texas. It is so discouraging to see the violence starting again when we have COVID-19 to still have to deal with. No question. No question for you. I just wanted to comment. Please, America, let's pull together. It will be the only way we will remain strong in America. And that's signed by Leslie from Wichita, Kansas. Well, Leslie, yes. And I have, you know, stated on the show before and that, you know, this business about violence and the domestic terrorism, it does have a tendency to come back around. And now that people are being released back out into their general population, so to speak, there's going to be an uptick. There won't be any doubt about that. Now, this person wrote this in before the incident in Minnesota, so I might want to add that. All right, but I still wanted to do it because last week we replay the show because normally on the holiday weekends we replay the shows and I'll replay a show. So I didn't have a chance to be able to address Leslie's comment. Let's go to the second email, Jim. Our nation is exploding once again with the useless cop killing of a black citizen. When will police officers get the message that the black community will not put up with this type of outrageous behavior by cops? Not only did Chauvin, that's the police officer, for those of you who don't remember his name, commit the horrific act, but we've all seen the other three officers who witnessed it and did nothing to stop it. I did some research. 84% of fellow officers have witnessed more force than necessary, and 61% don't report serious abuse. I know all police officers are not bad. You were one. Would you have condemned such behavior? Your thoughts would be appreciated, and that's signed by Vera from Denver, Colorado. Oh, look, Vera, yes, I was a police officer, and I obviously and have condemned on the show before about the outrageous behavior that police officers have done. Yes, I am of the frame of mind that not all police officers are bad. The percentages are very low. But when these things happen, unfortunately, it's so horrific, Jamal, that, you know, the population gets upset about it. I mean, you've seen some of this in your lifetime, I'm sure.
Absolutely. I think that's people's frustration. You have one cop who committed the act, and you had three to four more standing around watching. Now, if you hear a guy, you know, saying that he can't breathe, I mean, I think it's the obligation of the other officers to say, hey, like, we got to make sure this man can breathe, you know what I mean? So, and plus he was in handcuffs. So, I really don't understand the whole, somebody should have stepped in and had some common sense and, you know what I mean? If somebody was going overboard.
Go ahead.
Well, and I feel like that's what gives police departments a bad rep overall. One does, other people cover up for it, and that's what people, you know, that's what people get frustrated about.
Look, there's a lot of these things that happen. I don't know about the training in Minnesota, quite frankly, but I can tell you I was a member of the L.A. County Sheriff's Department. We don't behave in that. You know, we don't see these kind of things from the L.A. County Sheriff's Department. We've got one of the best trainings, if not the best trainings in the country. And that's the kind of behavior we don't do. It's true, Vera. I was a police officer. And to answer your question more directly, if I was standing there and I had seen this happen, I would have said something. I would have done something if need be. You know, there is a camaraderie with this. And that's the sad part sometimes. And I get that. But, you know, when an officer crosses the line, they're crossing the line. And it's true about these percentages, because I was very familiar with these percentages myself. And it's true. They don't always report and they don't always say something because, again, they don't want to be a rat. They don't want to be snitched at, you know, a snitch or, you know, this or that. But the times have got to change with that. Jamal,
what you just described is a gang culture. Gang members aren't supposed to rap. They're not supposed to snitch. They're not supposed to do anything. And it sounds like that what you're saying is that they're living by the same code the streets live by. And if that's what they do, then that's what they do. You know what I mean? I understand that you develop a relationship with all these people that you work with. You're not going to report everything. You're not going to snitch on your boy. You might actually have to catch your back in a gunfight. You know, but where does it stop? Because, you know, we got to hold our police officers to a higher standard than the gang culture.
Vera, I hope we've answered your question. I'm going to get to this third email, and it's along the same lines as well. This email is from Camille from Richmond, Virginia. And basically, Camille is asking us regarding the penalty for third-degree murder, it's called, or manslaughter, second-degree manslaughter. Is what this individual is being charged with. By the way, Jamal, did you know he was on our suicide watch?
No.
Yeah, he's on suicide watch. He's on a $500,000 bond. Probably won't have an opportunity to get out of jail. He's in there. And I also understand that another person from that department actually was convicted of third-degree murder and is doing time out of that same department. You know, so at any rate, with what we're going to do here, Zaylor is going to be calling in here at his convenience. So we'll be talking to him shortly in order to get a firsthand account about what's going on out there in Minnesota. And while we're waiting for him to call, you know, just in general, this business about, you know, police brutality in America. Now, look, there's a difference between protesting. And I think you would agree with me on this, Jamal. There's a difference between protesting and riots. Now, what we're observing across the country, I want to use the word it's ridiculous, but here's the deal. People don't understand what's behind some of this. And when we're more into the talking about domestic terrorism, I have explained to the listeners in the past that they actually have agitators out there, people that are not necessarily from the community who come into the community. Antifa is one of them. They send people in, and it's what they do. They encourage people to do the destruction. They actually encourage them. And some people even get paid to come into these communities and do that. And that's the shame of this. And I was talking to my other son this morning, and he was saying that my son Jermaine, and he was saying that there was one place where they actually had bricks that were all stacked up nice and neat. Okay, it was there for everybody, and it was by, you know, places where there was a lot of glass. And obviously that was there for a reason. Now, somebody came in and stacked up those bricks in the middle of the night, middle of the day, whether the case may be, so that when these people came and they saw these bricks, they would start throwing the bricks through the windows. Now, apparently, there was a group of people that stood around the bricks realizing, hey, we're being set up. Don't touch the bricks. Don't do this. So they actually refrained from doing it, which I think is phenomenal. I think that that's good. Now, the other concern that we have is when we have all of these other cities that are erupting. I mean, right before I came in here, Indianapolis, I mean, all these different places where this shooting did not take place. Now, look, I understand we have all of the people out there. It's all across the country. I get that. But now you just have all of these cities that are going into, these riots, and they're stealing. And there is a difference between outright stealing, going into these places and breaking into the windows and going in there and stealing merchandise. And that, to me, is an absolute shame.
Right.
I had one of my friends call me the other day. She turned around and told me that she saw a kid going into a liquor store bringing out bottles of Seagram's in the liquor store. It's like, now, was he getting that for him, or was he getting that for his parents or somebody that said, go in there and get it? Who knows, from that perspective. But what we don't know and what we don't understand about these people that are behind the scenes. Now, Jamal, some of those people are actually paid to do that. And they create this. And on the show before, I've talked about this organization called the Black Bloc. Okay. Those are the guys that you see that when these kind of, like Ferguson, when these kind of things happen, these guys are wearing these black masks with the hoodies that come over there. And they're the ones that are encouraging people and even themselves where they're creating some of this destruction. Now, these days, everybody's wearing a mask. So it's going to be hard to identify. Although some people in the videos that we've been able to see, they weren't necessarily all wearing masks. So, they're supposed to be still being trying to be safe and all of that. But, some of these police departments are now, basically saying, we're not going to be putting up with the looting. Because there's a difference between looting and a peaceful protest. If you want to protest, and I think most of the country, quite frankly, is in agreement that this behavior is inappropriate in terms of the behavior of the police officer Derek Chauvin was inappropriate. I don't think anybody can disagree with that, except for one person. I had one of my friends the other day send me a video of a mayor, I believe, of a city down in Mississippi that was saying that he agrees with the tactics that the officer used. Or maybe he was the police chief of this particular city. And how can you possibly agree with that kind of behavior? That, to me, is absolutely ridiculous.
I think, honestly, this is the first time that I've seen a number, maybe it's because of the advance of social media and how much it is, but this is the first time I've actually seen a lot of cops that actually publicly in uniform said they don't condone what that officer did. I don't think I've ever seen that before. Not this many cops come forward and say they don't agree with that.
Jamal, he was fired immediately. He was fired immediately for a reason. Okay.
No, I agree with that. Yeah.
I know you agree. Now, something else we need to correct also for the record out there. People were saying that he had his knee on his neck with his hands in his pocket. His hands were not in his pocket. It looked like that. He was wearing black gloves and he had on dark pants. So that's why it looked like his hands were in his pocket. But his hands were not in his pocket. Just to clarify.
Now could you possibly just go over what the procedures are? Because it seemed like he was in handcuffs when he was down on the ground, when the officer had his knee in his neck. Is there any reason, any circumstances that would cause somebody to have their hands behind their back handcuffed and have a knee in that position?
Well, Jamal, as far as I'm concerned, when you say what's the procedure is very simple, all right? When we have somebody, I see Zayla has clicked in. He's connecting in a minute here, but I want to continue adding your question. All right. And Zayla, are you on now?
Yep. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can now. Thank you. Thank you for joining the show. Jamal just asked a question about the procedures the police officer should follow when you take a person into custody. So I want to just explore that real quick. And then we can get into the other pieces of your call. So, Jamal, to answer your question, look, if we take a suspect into custody, the first thing, and I'm talking LA County Sheriff's Department, I don't know about other departments, but the way that we would do it, you know, the person is handcuffed. Okay. The person is immediately taken to a vehicle. He's put in the vehicle. All right. And basically he's taken to jail. Now, if you have somebody that's resisting arrest, other officers are going to come to your assistance. It's just that simple. Because if he's unruly, if he's doing this, they're going to use the mass of numbers to get the guy down, hold a guy down, and restrain the guy at that point. So once they get him down, if they have to get him down on the ground, they put the handcuffs on. And sometimes we use foot restraints also, because we've also been kicked by suspects. All right. So that's within policy. All right. Now, this particular incident, and I think Zeller, you know, can even comment on this, because I think he's, you know, a little bit familiar with what's going on out there in Minnesota from that standpoint. But once this person to me was subdued, all right, to me, there was no reason for him to put his, I don't know what he was waiting for 8 minutes and 46 seconds.
Right.
Why he had to put his knee on this guy's neck. Okay. And I couldn't see whether or not, and Zella maybe can enlighten us on this, whether or not anybody else was holding him down, like with his other extremities. I couldn't see that. But anyway, that just gives you an overview, Jamal. So to me, this guy exceeded any kind of improper force that he should have used. The guy's handcuffed. He's not going anywhere at that point.
Right.
Zella, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, our pleasure. You know, I told the audience beforehand that you're right out there in the middle of this, basically. And so your comments would be appreciated. First of all, in terms of the way that this person was subdued, et cetera, I don't know if you have any additional knowledge to that you could share with us.
Yeah, so there's several videos that have been made public. There's a video from the convenience store that's across the street from the Cup Foods. That video is important because it shows exactly when George Floyd was taken out of the vehicle. There were two officers that were there that were present. One of those officers appears to be of African-American descent. It's a long video. It's like 8 to 10 minutes. And there's a discussion. Mr. Floyd sits down on the ground. He's handcuffed. You can see him walked across the street in front of the Cub Foods to the right of the police vehicle. And then there's a gap. There are no videos that show what happens between that point and the video that everybody is seeing with Mr. Floyd on the ground on the driver's side of the officer's vehicle with the three officers on top of him holding him down. So there's an important gap there because it appears as though for the 10 minutes from the moment he was taken out of his vehicle until, you know, the first video ends, he was completely cooperative. It's possible that there was some interaction that he had with the officer Chauvin. Who knows? But there's an important gap there that we need to know as the public. Go ahead, Jamal.
Zeller, are the police out there, are they required to wear body cameras?
So Minnesota, it's been interesting. There's been a demand for body cameras in all the different places. If my memory serves me correct, Minneapolis does require body cameras. There's always a rub in regards to when that footage is to be released, because there have been other shootings that the public has demanded the immediate release of those body cameras. A lot of times the argument that's been brought forward has been privacy concerns of bystanders and things of that nature and their policies and things like that. But there are, my understanding is that there's been reporting that yes, that there are body cameras and that is information that the county attorney, Mike Freeman, may have access to that the public doesn't have access to in regard to this. So maybe that, again, that gap in video from that's already been released to the public, he would have access to all that information.
Well, let's talk about that gap real quick. Is there a gap because the camera now just went blank, or is it a gap because he went behind the vehicle and they just merely couldn't see what happened on the other side of the vehicle?
All we can see is a video that's been released to the public, and the one that's been released to the public hasn't showed everything. And there's no reason to believe why that the video would have stopped at a particular moment. But that the vantage point of the first video wouldn't show what happened on the left side, the driver's side of the officer's vehicle anyway. The way that the camera is designed, it's actually looking to protect that business and not necessarily the business across the street, which is a Cup Foods.
Okay, so there may not have been an issue where somebody tampered with it. It's just simply, it was probably out of view of the camera. That's what I want to clarify.
Yeah. That's my belief.
Okay. Now, look, the situation out there, Zayla, we've seen these incidents in your lifetime, my lifetime, Jamal's lifetime regarding this business about whether or not, you know, because the first thing everybody wants to bring up is racism. My concern is not necessarily the word racism. My concern is the behavior that consistently continues to happen, whether that's, you know, a lack of training, whether that's a lack of discipline by the organization, or is it racism? It could be any one of those things. Now, the way that the general public is going to view this, of course, is as racism. And we can only assume that this is a racist act, in my opinion. And I'm not one that jumps on that bandwagon. This guy has been not disciplined over the 19 years he's been there. My understanding is he's had other incidents. I don't know who the suspects were in terms of what their race were, you know, et cetera. My concern is that he's never been reprimanded in 19 years, and the word has it that he is engaged in inappropriate behavior in the past. Have you heard anything that could, that lends any information to that?
Yes, Jim. So to be very honest, the one of the problems that we have here, and this is actually a question I want to pose to you as a former officer as well. Here in Minneapolis, the president of the police union, which is Bob Crow, he in essence has more power than the police chief, and he has more power than the mayor. They've required and demanded different changes in regards to training and things of that nature, and the police union is so strong and so powerful that he can in essence say no and override any mandate provided to him by the police chief or by the mayor. And that's been extremely problematic because, you know, part of the discussion I've been having with some of my friends today is, you know, and Jamal mentioned this earlier, you have more police chiefs and folks in law enforcement across the country that have been speaking out in regards to this situation, saying this is absolutely uncalled for, never should have happened. You know, why is the police union backing this guy's play? It reminds me of the Catholic Church, where they know that you have priests that are engaging in some of this conduct. And why aren't you just turning them over? Why are you backing their play in every single thing that they do if you believe that what they're doing is not appropriate and against policies and procedures? And that's the part that erodes any kind of trust that the public Absolutely. Would have in regard to these institutions.
Absolutely.
Well, let me just tell you, the unions. These guys are all elected by the police officers. Yep. The unions are going to stand by the police officers. Amen. That's just what it's going to be, okay, from that perspective. The reason why they probably have a lot of power is because these guys are elected by the masses, all right? And they're going to go by their union members, and it's going to be a strong position. Now, I don't know if the police chief, as an example, in Minneapolis, is he in an elected position?
He's elected by the members. So there's no incentive for the police union members to vote him out. And right. For example, when President Trump came here, the mayor didn't want him here, but he was here and it was requested that, let's say, the police officers and the police union not attend and not participate in this. We already have problems in regards to, you know, the racism here and the impression that officers have this racial bias, especially given the history of some of the shootings like Philando Castile and others. But then you have, you know, the president of the police union on stage with Donald Trump, when you have thousands upon thousands upon thousands of peaceful protesters outside saying no. Now, yes, he has his right to be political as he wants to, but then he also has a responsibility to protect and serve his community. And that alienates a huge segment of our community if he's there. And there's already the impression that a lot of the supporters of the president or some of the supporters of the president or those that are racist are supporting this president and not supporting others. So So that's, I mean, that's the stuff that's extremely problematic for us. The other thing I want to make sure that I add really quick, Jim, is that, you know, since the Orlando Castillo murder, virtually all the folks in positions of power here have changed. We have a different governor. We have a different lieutenant governor. We have a different attorney general. You know, we have a different mayor. We have a different city council that's extremely diverse. What we don't have is a difference. Where we don't have that difference in regards to leadership is the, oh, and the chief of police is different as well. Where we don't have a difference is the county attorney, which is Mike Freeman, who's been in that position since I originally moved to Minnesota in 2007. And there's been demands for him, you know, to be removed from office. But yeah, again, that's an elected position. And so people have to elect him out. And the other position that's the same, that was same and present during the Philando Castile murder was the president of the police union.
Zaylor, I have a question real quick. You know, for the three, I believe it was three officers that were standing by watching, they haven't been arrested or charged with anything. Can they be charged with something for standing by and watching?
So there was a community, there was a police commission that occurred for several years. And there's actually that public commission that had community members on it included a requirement that they publish the use of force policy and protocol so that the public would be aware of that. And that use of force policy also indicates when officers should have an obligation and responsibility to intervene if they feel as though one of their colleagues is using excessive force given the circumstances. Jim, I believe I sent that over to you yesterday or a few days ago. Right. And so, I mean, there's that. But then the question becomes, is that just an internal policy or procedure of the police department that would result in them being just terminated from their positions as opposed to being arrested? It's my understanding that the county attorney's office is still continuing to look into whether there are any charges that can be brought under the other officers, but that's what the community is demanding. These are officers that were in positions. The difficulty here is that Officer Chowin, it's my understanding that he's the one that was the most senior on site once he arrived. And so, you know, Jim, the question there is, you know, if he's the most senior that arrives, I mean, do people just defer to what he's doing and don't want to call him out in regard to his conduct if they're the ones that only have 1, 2, 3 years of experience on the force when he has, you know, 17 to 20 years on the force?
Well, you know, that's what's going to happen. That happens in any job site, not just police department. I mean, you work with me for a longest time and you still do. So, you know, when you work in an ordinary work environment, come on, this is the manager. This is the person that's doing this. And everybody's basically standing back and following their lead because they don't want to offend anybody. They don't want to put their own selves in jeopardy. You know, as I had stated earlier, for me personally, I don't care whether he was the senior person or not. I personally would have said something. Hey, you know, this and that, because I'd want to be on the record. To answer Jamal's question more directly, Zeller, the way I look at this is that in any criminal act, and he's been charged with a crime, you have accessories. Now, I know you know that.
Okay? Yeah.
So to me, okay, we got to separate out what the public demands, okay? Because the public is always going to demand the worst case scenario. You know, he should be convicted of first degree murder, you know, and probably, you know, give him the death penalty, whatever the case may be. And it doesn't work that way. Those are the emotions of the people, all right? We still got to go by the criminal statutes, okay? So to me, if there's a criminal act, okay, and you're there and you have, now think about this, they've got an affirmative duty to protect the public. So while they're there in that capacity, their duty to me overrides whether he has the authority over them or not, because their first obligation is to protect the community. They take an oath. We take an oath, okay?
Yeah.
That, you know, we're there to protect, okay? To protect and serve. And in my opinion, under those facts, the three standing around were not there to protect and serve. All right? So Jamal, to answer your question, there are criminal statutes that are out there. I suspect that these guys will probably get charged, because they were there, and I agree with you that at a minimum, those guys could get fired for not following policy or standing by and not doing anything. My greater concern, to be perfectly honest with you, is that this guy's been there for 19 years and he's engaged in similar behavior before. Okay, why wasn't any action taken against him previous to this? So, I mean, I know that that's probably going to more go to the civil side because, you know, that lawsuit's coming.
Oh, yeah.
That's probably going to go more to the civil side, is that, you know, you had knowledge of the fact that this guy engaged in this kind of behavior, and yet you never disciplined him and you kept him on the force. So those numbers, as far as I'm concerned, are probably going to be astronomical, and they should be, quite frankly. But more important, what happens to the people over this guy that never took any action against him? I'm curious whether or not that's something that's going to come out. And I'll tell you something else I learned today. I'm not sure if you're aware of this, Taylor. They had another person on that same police force that got convicted of third degree murder and is doing time. Were you aware of that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you have to wonder why, if that guy got convicted, somebody took the action. What was it with this guy that they didn't take any action against this guy, you know, from that perspective?
And Jim, to add something really quick, and this may be something that's not, you know, public knowledge nationally, but is very relevant here locally. You know, not long ago, there was a woman, an Australian woman, that was killed during by a police officer.
I remember that.
And that officer that was involved in that killing was of Somali descent. He's the one that ended up getting convicted. So then the question becomes, and if my memory serves me correct, he's the only officer in Minnesota that's been convicted in regards to, you know, a police related shooting. So then our community is questioning, why is it that the black officer is held to a different standard in regard to these types of things? And then it's like, you know, when there's a black officer and a white person, or a white woman's the one that gets shot and killed, all of a sudden it's an issue. All of a sudden the city provides millions and millions of dollars in regards to a settlement. But when it's a black member of our community that's killed by a white officer, those aren't the circumstances that happen. So one of your questions earlier was, you know, I know that people want to jump to this being a racial thing, but when you look at the totality of the circumstances and you look at all these different shootings and everything, why is that situation so dissimilar than some of these other situations?
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with that, Taylor. Let me just make myself clear on that, all right? I don't disagree with that. I think that the statistics have to bear themselves out. Look, how many times a year are we listening to this? I mean, and quite frankly, there's other statistics out there that people never take into consideration. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to divert from this particular discussion for a second. But we never hear about black officers who shoot black people. We never hear about black officers who shoot white people. The only time that we ever hear about these things is when a white officer shoots a black person. And I think that's wrong. I think we need to have it all across the board. An improper shooting is an improper shooting. But the media doesn't want to cover something that's not, you know, controversial. I mean, a black officer shoots a white person, we're not going to hear about that on the news. Why? Because of the fact that that's not the news. They only care about it when it happens the opposite way, because it does inflame people's emotions and things of that nature. But anytime, to me, if there's an improper shooting, or let's just say the situation was reversed and that was a black officer that had his knee on the neck of a white person, you wonder whether or not it would have gotten the same coverage. What do you think?
Jim, I think it would have gotten the same coverage. One of the problems is that, I mean, with the, I mean, I love what Will Smith said, that, you know, this isn't new. It's just that it's being recorded. Right. And, you know, the issue here is that we've seen these videos of these arrests. We've seen videos of people that are not people of color engage in all kinds of conduct that, if somebody was black or brown, engaged in similar conduct, they would have been shot, they would have been arrested, or something to that effect. And so then the question becomes is, you know, and you can see it with your own eyes. So then the question becomes is, why is there a different standard for folks that are white in their interactions with the police?
Well, that's always going to be an issue. There's no doubt about it. That's the country that we live in. And I don't know the solution. I mean, we've been trying to resolve this for how long now? 100 years plus? Yeah, it's been around forever. Hey, but let's jump to something else real quick. What about the Caucasian lady that was on the news dialing 911 about the dog and the black guy that was recording her? Did you hear about that?
Yep, in Central Park. So those, yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it was in Central Park. So right away, that's that mentality people would argue about. that was she being racist? To me, she was being racist, quite frankly. It is an example of it because she had her dog off the leash. All the black man, the citizen said, was put your dog on the leash. And she wants to be on her cell phone calling 911 to this man, that this black man is threatening her about her dog. And that wasn't the facts at all.
But you know what's sad, though? More people seem to be upset about what she was doing with that dog than the racist, you know, phone call to the police. Seriously, I've seen more outrage about her choking the dog. Then they're like, "What? Look what she doing to the dog! Look what she about to do to him!" And if he wasn't recording it, he'd probably be in jail or trying to find an expensive lawyer to, you know, to help with the legal fees behind it.
She lost her job behind this, and
thank God, and now she wanted to apologize after she lost her job. You know what I mean?
After the fact.
Hey, so she lost her job. Really quick, I want to make sure I comment on that too. So she lost her job. The where she rescued her dog, they took the dog back, which is important. But the important thing I want to make sure that our listeners focus on is connecting the dots between that situation and the situation with George Floyd. Because listen to what it was that she said to the officers, right? He's threatening my life. And so you have officers showing up, you know, guns blazing in regards to this because they think, you know, they hear this white woman is fearing for her life from this black man, right? And what, you know, what's the interaction going to be when the officers get on the scene, right?
Right.
They're going to be in fear for her life. They're going to be in fear for their life.
Shouldn't that be a crime? Because, I mean, they're going through the acting out and everything else and the fake crying. And
That's not going to be a crime. She's calling in because she felt that she was being threatened. What she's wrong about that is another issue. She genuinely thought, okay, in her mind, that's what was going on. It's wrong, okay, but that's not going to be a crime. But I want to bring something else up real quick because one of the person sent me an email, asked about the sentencing, Zeller, he's been charged with third degree murder, okay, and also manslaughter is what these charges are. And her question, was Camille from Richmond, Virginia, and I know the answer to this. I'd like to see what you say, see if we agree.
just so the listeners know, we're not on the same side politically.
See, when you said something about Trump, I wasn't going to say anything, Alan. I was because, see, as I already told them, you're my stepson, and we're going to have these discussions. They don't know about the discussions when we have our regular discussions on a week. But I just decided to let it go because I didn't want this conversation to go somewhere else. No. We're not going to go there. Let's stick with the sentencing between third degree and explaining what third degree murder is and also manslaughter. Let's stick with that for right now.
Okay. So what's the question?
You were so busy worried about me and Trump. But at any rate.
No, you didn't finish answering the question.
So the question I asked was Camille from Richmond, Virginia asked about the sentencing for third degree murder versus the sentencing for manslaughter. She wanted to know which one is lighter. And I know the answer to that. Let's see what you have to say.
Oh, manslaughter is always lighter. The thing here is, I mean, I know that there's folks that are, especially here in my community in Minneapolis, that are demanding a first degree, you know, but the difficulty is that, I mean, there's the premeditation, there's the planning and the preparation. He had to have said, woke up in the morning, or weeks before and said, I'm going to kill George Floyd and made plans to make it happen and carry out that plan and kill him in order for it to be first degree murder. I don't do criminal law. I do employment law. But I mean, these are standard things that we learn in law school and become licensed attorneys. And so the standards are different when you go from first degree to second degree to third degree. Third degree is just a depraved, you know, complete depraved indifference in regards to the life of the person that they're interacting with. You know, it's the example of, you know, shooting into a building, knowing that there are people in the building. You know, you're not intending to kill somebody, but you clearly don't care in regards to whether somebody gets seriously injured or killed by engaging that conduct. And so, you know, it's possible based on the additional information that's reviewed, that's provided to the county attorney, that it could rise to maybe second degree. But I mean, the third, at least he's arrested. At least there's charges against him. And if the county attorney finds that there's, you know, appropriate evidence to support charges being brought against the other officers, which many of us believe that there is, then those should be coming forthwith as well.
Okay. Well, to answer Camille's question more directly, is that the difference in the sentencing between the two is that, believe it or not, third degree murder brings about a 12 and a half year mm-hmm. prison sentence, and the manslaughter sentence is only 4 years. Now, I'm going to tell you something. If this guy ends up getting a sentence of 12 years only, as an example, or even worse than as a 4 year sentence, that city is going to explode once again, because they're not going to be happy with that.
And he should.
Yeah, but Jamal, the judge is going to, Jamal, the jury only determines his guilt or innocence. Okay. The judge.
Right. No, I get it.
Okay. So whatever the judge ends up finding, okay, in terms of if the maximum sentence by statute is 12 and a half years, he can't do anything more than that. Now, if they try to bring a hate crime into it, then right. I think you would agree with me on this. If they make it a hate crime, then they can escalate the penalty up. But we don't know that they've gone there yet. I know that the FBI, I believe, is also investigating this. So we have to wait yep. and see what they came up with. Now, already, Zayla, there's going to be a controversy. I don't know if you've seen the autopsy. Did you hear about the autopsy results?
Man. Oh, I sure did.
Yep. Here we go. They said he did not die by strangulation, that he died because of the fact that he had, you know, underlying health conditions. He had heart disease. He was asthmatic. He had some other issues. Look, the problem, Zayla, you know, remember in basic law school, what do we learn? You take your victim as you find them.
You take your victims as you find them.
You know, so he's not going to be able to get away with that as an argument because, Jamal, just to give you an example, if I walk up and punch somebody in the nose, that's a simple battery. But
right.
if that person's a hemophiliac and they bleed to death, you take your victims as you find them. Don't you agree with that, Taylor?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so I think that there's going to be some issues if this guy. Now, they do have another doctor. What's the guy? The pathologist is flying in there. Dr. Bowden or Biden or something like that is flying. I forget what his name is, but he's a famous pathologist, a coroner. He's flying in there because the family has retained him to do an autopsy. Now, what happens if his findings are the same? See, the general public doesn't accept those kind of things because they're not going to want to accept that. But the death is still the death. I back up and say, look, whether he had an underlying condition or not, if you hadn't engaged in that kind of behavior, yep. okay, that man very well could still be alive, especially if he's Absolutely. Telling you, I can't breathe. So to
Absolutely.
Me, it was his behavior either way, okay, that is still out of line.
If he was walking down the street, he wouldn't have fallen dead at that moment, would he? No.
And that's what it is. I remember in basic law school, if a person is dying from cancer, we'll say, and he's got, you know, 2 months to live, and you go and you shoot him and kill him, hey, you're going to jail. It doesn't matter that he's got 2 months left to live. I mean, that's just the way that it works because you snuffed out his life early.
So what do we do? What does the people do from here?
Well, Jamal, that's...
In terms of police training and stuff, because we starting to see more and more and more again on video that, you know what I mean? Like the incident, the guy that was choked to death over selling loose cigarettes and
yep.
things like that. You know, and these guys are unarmed and stuff like that.
The training, let me tell you something. Police officers get trained. They get training, Jamal. The issue is not training. L.A. County Sheriff's Department did extensive training for people, okay? And fortunately for us, we haven't seen these incidents with us, okay? But these other agencies, Jamal, they get the training, okay? It's just that some of these guys, after working the streets for so long, sometimes just get hardened. They shouldn't be that way. Look at Zayla's shirt. I can't breathe. Okay, so those are out now also. Okay. But
hey, so they have, like
they have these trainings out there, but if you don't pay attention, think about the sexual you guys, Zayla, how many sexual harassment trainings have you done working with me, you know, at the company? Hundreds of them.
Yes.
And you still get a call from a manager who went through the training and they turned around and sexually harassed an employee.
The exact same stuff we told them not to do.
Exactly. So the problem is these guys lose their focus, you know, for whatever reason. People's lives change. They change. There's a lot of different reasons. So really, it's not just the training. But Zayla, before, because we only have 5 minutes left, Zayla, let's talk about, you know, I want to send a shout out to you and the people that you were working with, because I know that you were out there you know, with a shovel and a broom cleaning up the mess. And that's very, so speak for a couple of moments on that as well, about these citizens that have really come to the rescue of the businesses out there.
Yeah, Minnesota has really come together in regards to what's happened. You know, I've seen, I mean, that virtually to the site almost every day, and there's always thousands and thousands of people there. You know, at the, right after the riots, the very next morning, there were people in the community with their brooms and their snow shovels. You know, we actually get to use that outside of winter. The snow shovels, you know, cleaning up the neighborhoods, you know, whether they be small businesses or corporate businesses. I mean, some of these businesses probably don't even know that the community came in and cleaned up, you know, businesses that burned down, bricks all over the streets, people picking those up, you know, working together to try to help this our community heal. And you know, since I've been out there on the streets with my community in regards to that, I haven't been able to watch and see what's being conveyed in the news media across the country in regards to this. But the community is demanding, you know, demanding justice, and it's not just the Black community. I was just at the protest and the vigil yesterday at the site. There were thousands upon thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people there. I'd say about 90, 95% of them had masks on. And it's not just the Black community. Well, it's over half of them are not Black.
No,
it looks like a pretty diverse group.
Right. I agree with that. But I'm going to tell you something in the last minute or two. We got a text message from a friend of mine who you actually know, Zaylor, but he sent a text message that his sister-in-law, okay, down in Los Angeles, they had a business. And they were inside their business with guns to protect their business from the people coming in. And I told them that's not a smart thing to do. If they turn around and start shooting up people because it's a business, you cannot use, you know, lethal force for the protection of property. It's just that simple. And of course, you know, the old standard, well, suppose they're in fear of their lives. What are they doing there? Okay, because they show up. It's a business. It's not their home. Go ahead, Jamal. I want to hear Zeller real quick first.
Oh.
Go ahead, Zeller. Don't you agree?
No, absolutely. But there are people here that are doing that as well. One of the things that we're doing here in North Minneapolis, where I live, which is the hub of the Black community here in the Twin Cities, is there's a community watch group that's been put together by our city councilman, Philippe Cunningham. And we're out in our orange shirts watching and protecting the businesses here and just being present. Because what we found is that that there are people that are from out of state. There are white supremacists that are showing up here. There are people from that don't live in the Minneapolis that are coming here to create drama and create havoc. And what they're doing is they're targeting businesses that are in the shadows and aren't being cared for and or protected. So we're out on the streets to make sure that you know, that they see us. And it worked last night. It looks like last night in Minnesota. Didn't have as much have any rioting or damage that like there was in many of the other cities across the country.
Okay, you know, Zella, there are also Black agitators out there. You mentioned white supremacists.
I'm not saying there aren't any.
Okay, all right. I just want to make sure that we give equal time. But Jamal, you had a question. What was your question that you wanted to pose to Zella and I?
Man, I forgot. Man, it slipped my mind.
But the important thing is that there are videos out there showing, you know, some of these people that have been caught, you know, engaging in some of this conduct, and it's not who you would expect for it to be. You know,
I agree with that. No,
putting Black Lives Matter on there and being confronted by people like me, the protesters, the peaceful protesters that are just demanding justice peacefully. It's a different element of folks that are showing up here at night. Once the curfew goes in, I just got a text message again that the curfew is going to start at 8 o'clock today. You know, this is a different element of people that are out there. There are many vehicles driving around without license plates. People are stealing vehicles and then using them to engage in this type of conduct. So, you know, people just need to be aware and be vigilant. And you see something, report it.
And I think that's the most important thing as well. Jamal, very quickly, on our sports piece, right, real quick. I understand that an ex-NFL executive is saying that Colin Kaepernick should be signed immediately and that he thinks that this will help quell the fears out there.
Man, let me tell you something. I'm so mad at Kaepernick because all that stuff that he was saying he was taking a knee for, has anybody heard from him? Or did he just take his $10 million settlement and leave? Everybody was believing in him. I haven't heard from him. Now this is the time to speak up. Now this is the time to be out front. He got the settlement. We ain't heard from him yet.
Jamal, let me provide you with an update. Number one, Colin Kaepernick indicated that he would pay for the legal fees, the attorneys that are representing any of the protesters that are being arrested here, that are peacefully protesting and being tear gassed and having pepper spray and the rubber bullets being shot at them. As well, the ACLU is looking for plaintiffs and they're going to be taking a case against them engaging in this conduct. So that's helpful as well. Again, I was out getting food for our community members that now don't have grocery stores to buy food at because they've been looted or burned. I see you, Jim. But my memory is certainly correct. Colin Kaepernick was here and they just had a protest that he led here in Minnesota. That's something to look out for. That's something to look out for. I think that started at 3 o'clock today.
That sounds great.
My respects.
I still don't think he should be signed for the NFL team, though. I think what he's doing is good, but I don't think that means he gets signed by the NFL team.
He wasn't good when he was playing, though. Never mind.
All right.
Jamal will get some hate mail.
All right. You've been listening. Okay, guys, we got to wrap it up. All right. You've been listening to Jim Potts and Jamal Potts and Zaylor Stout on LA Talk Radio. It's time to close out the show. Be sure to join us next week and do us a favor. If you like what you heard, spread the word. Until then, be aware, be vigilant, and be safe. Until next week. Okay, thanks, guys.
All right.
Signing off. Nice. All right, bye.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.